Albert Einstein once stated that logic will get you from A to B. Imagination will take you everywhere. Imagination is the ability or the action of creating new ideas that or concepts of objects that are not present in real life. It is fundamentally the capability of an individual's brain to be resourceful and creative. With imagination, we can be creative. It allows us to be able to think outside the box. We can come up with new ideas and new solutions. Imagination encourages intellectual growth. Without imagination, our lives would be far less interesting. And without imagination, we would probably not have all the things. We would live in a less developed world for sure. Mark Twain also had an interesting observation. He stated that you can't depend on your eyes when your imagination is out of focus. We can't trust our eyes when our imagination is not focused to where it should be. There's a danger in letting our imaginations go into areas to go unchecked or to get out of focus. We can imagine doing the wrong things, acquiring that which is not good for us. Imaginations that are unmanaged can head down a road that will create problems for us in the long run. Imagination must be kept in perspective and must be kept in balance. The last of the Ten Commandments, go over to Exodus chapter 20, kind of hits upon imagination. Again, imagination can be good. Imagination can be bad sometimes, depending upon it. But the Tenth Commandment actually addresses our imagination. It ensures that the imagination is kept in check. Back in Exodus chapter 20 and verse 17, again, this is where the Ten Commandments were given to the nation of Israel. Verse 17, you shall not covet your neighbor's house. And house implies a household. And then it begins to talk about what's in that household. You shall not covet your neighbor's house. You shall not covet your neighbor's wife, nor his male servant, nor his female servant, nor his ox or his donkey, nor anything that is your neighbor's. It's interesting to note that in Deuteronomy chapter 5, the first two are interchanged. Not coveting your neighbor's wife is actually mentioned first, and then house. Catholic Church has removed the second commandment about worshiping idols or making graven images, and they go right from the first commandment to the third commandment. And then they end up in 10, they break the 10th commandment into two different separate commandments. The 9th says you shall not covet your neighbor's wife, and the 10th says you now shall not covet your neighbor's goods. And so they have two commandments at the end to make, since they dropped the second commandment. So this conforms to Deuteronomy chapter 5, but it doesn't conform to Exodus chapter 20. So is the 9th commandment really the 10th commandment, or is the 10th commandment the 9th commandment? If they just had left it like it was, like God inspired it, then they wouldn't be so confused, or at least I wouldn't be so confused. But if you've seen one of their services, you understand why they removed the second about not making any graven images. But here we find a sevenfold safeguard of other people's interests that reveals the premise that God wants us to have, and that is to have an underlying concept of outgoing concern for others. So here in Exodus chapter 20 and verse 17, we find the last of God's Ten Commandments recorded. But just because it's the Tenth Commandment doesn't mean that it has the least impact or is less important. In fact, if we don't keep this last Tenth Commandment, we can break the 9th about bearing false witness. We can steal. If we break the Tenth Commandment, we can commit adultery. We can murder. We can not honor our father and mother. We can break the Sabbath day because we are working on it or doing things on it that we shouldn't if we covet. We can take God's name in vain, and we can make for ourselves idols upon this earth. We can have other gods before us if we break this 10th commandment. So what is coveting? Why is coveting outline and given in the Ten Commandments. Is it wrong to have desires? Is it wrong to have wants? Where do we draw the line? How much is too much? Why does God give this commandment to us? And what can we avoid if we observe this Tenth Commandment? What grief can it prevent in our lives if we obey it? Well, let's define coveting. To covet means to yearn, to possess, or to have. To yearn, to possess, or to have. Some synonyms include to crave, to set one's heart on, to wish for, to long for, to hanker after, to thirst after, to hunger after. Covet means to desire or to take pleasure or delight beyond the acceptable bounds that God has established. It indicates to long after someone or something to the point that we can personally enjoy it. We can enjoy something that rightfully is not ours. This covetousness allows one's imagination to run out of control, indulging in thoughts that many times lead to actions and are prohibited by the other nine commandments. So the tenth commandment defines restraints and guidelines that allow us not to transgress the other nine. Well, let's consider today God's desire for us in this area. The title for the message this morning is Beware the Wrong Desires. Beware the Wrong Desires. I'm also going to focus on this concept of coveting, how it ties into our desires. Now, coveting generally stems from two different sources. The first source of coveting comes with a perspective of something that is desirable to possess. We come up with something that we want to possess. It's something outside of us that we want. You might find something attractive or beautiful. You might find something remarkable or interesting. You might find it alluring or appealing or engaging, but regardless of the reason that you find it desirable, you want it. You want it. You desire it. And many times we want things very badly. You start thinking about it. You start dwelling on it. It begins to consume a considerable portion of one's time when we begin to think about something or covet or even lust after something. So the first source comes from without. It comes from without us. The second source of coveting comes from within. It arises from a persistent inclination for something more abstract, like recognition or like advancement in God's church, as Mr. Maxwell pointed out, of being associated with prestige or power. So one source of coveting comes from without, from outside, and the other source comes from within. Well, where does covetousness come from? Let's go over to Matthew chapter 15. Where do evil thoughts and desires stem from? Matthew chapter 15. Again, a question had arisen, and Christ is taking the time to speak here, and he makes a certain differentiation in Matthew chapter 15. Beginning in verse 17. Do you not understand that whatever enters the mouth goes into the stomach and is eliminated, but those things which proceed out of the mouth and come from the heart, they are what defile a man. So out of the heart proceeds evil thoughts, murders, adulteries, fornications, thefts, false witness, and blasphemies. So covetousness is thinking in a wrong realm. It is comprised of evil thoughts, the wrong thoughts. And those evil thoughts, wanting or desiring something that is not good for you, can lead to murder or adultery or fornication or stealing something or lying about something. It can even lead to blasphemies. So this tenth commandment is far from being the least harmful if it's transgressed. The impact and the magnitude of this commandment is very powerful. In fact, it may very well be the last because it is so powerful in its effect on the previous nine commandments when you stop to think about it and analyze it. Romans chapter 8, Paul discusses the basic premise of the carnal mind. Romans chapter 8, beginning in verse 7. It says, because the carnal mind is enmity against God, it is not subject to the law of God, nor indeed can be. So then, those who are in the flesh cannot please God. Like it or not, the carnal mind is enmity against God. In the flesh alone, we cannot and we will not please God. Things got so bad in the days of Noah that it actually made God sorry that he made man, it's recorded. Seemingly, those times are coming upon us again. Luke chapter 17 alludes to this. Luke chapter 17 and verse 26. I can just read that if you want. As it was in the days of Noah, so will also be in the days of the Son of Man. They ate, they drank, they married wives, they were given in marriage. We don't even take on wives in these days. People just accept marriage for the sake of what they are lusting after, what they are coveting, what they are desiring, until the day that Noah entered the ark and the flood came and destroyed them all, in verse 27. It was in Luke 17, verses 26 and 27. You know, as in the days of Noah, the society has taken major steps to the road to destruction. As a result of men doing what is right in his or her eyes, we're starting to see the ramifications of that start going out into just about every facet of society. More and more heinous acts are occurring. It seems like people are just going in and letting loose. I saw something again on the news yesterday where someone had gone in and opened fire on people. I believe it was that, or it was, I think it was yesterday that I saw that. But people's minds are beginning to snap. The hedge of protection that we had from in this country from demons and from Satan seemingly is being lifted. You know, when you study the New Testament, when Christ came on the scene the first time, there were a lot of demons that were cast out. A lot of demons were in people. They took over people's lives. And it seemingly is happening today. We seem to have more and more heinous things that are occurring. It appears that God is removing the hedge of protection that we once had. Satan and his demons, the power is being unleashed on an unsuspecting world. Seems like the world wants to live without being criticized, and certain movements are taking hold to that further blinds the truth of God to this world. And to a large degree, covetousness has played a major part in all this. I want to be in office. I want to have my own way. I want to do what I want to do. I want to be my own man or my own woman. And in the case of some, they were a man. Now they want to be a woman. And then people get awards for being courageous. It's the truth of God is being further and further tossed aside by the world. Road rage is increasing. I know my daughter-in-law witnessed some things on her way back home from our house, I believe. Crime is increasing. People are out of control, and it seems like people's lives are spiraling downward. We're living beyond our means as individuals. We're living beyond our means as this nation. And the whole concept of credit is based on covetousness. When you stop to think about it, we buy things before we can afford to have them. Marketers, of course, have researched this and thoroughly studied what we refer to good old human nature. They know how to appeal to us, you know, get the car that you deserve. And not wanting to fall behind the social status that people want to be in and appear to be backward or behind the times. Sometimes we give in and we buy things on credit that perhaps should have waited. And I'm not saying that, you know, it's wrong to buy a house or something. You have to have a place to live, and, you know, there's a lot of considerations to take into that. It's really hard to save up for houses, as expensive they are, and you almost have to buy a house on credit. But there's many things that people buy on credit that perhaps would be better left, because they get themselves in trouble, is the point. Even as a nation, it seems like we were just at $16 trillion not too long ago. I think we're up to 18 something. I heard on the GOP debate the other day that it was 19. Perhaps it's reaching 19, but, you know, whether it's 18 or 19 trillion dollars, I mean, that's like 18,000 billion or 18 million million. That's a lot of money to be in debt. But we're living beyond our means as a nation. Hedge of the protection that God has provided this nation for many, many years seemingly is being removed, I should say. I know there's a lot of fires and things going up and droughts occurring in the West, and we have had our share of rain. We were trying to mow our hay here 3 days ago, and I think we got about 2 inches of rain. Just this black cloud just came and just dumped on us, probably the day that Mr. Maxwell was referring to, I think, or maybe Mr. Froge or somebody was talking about rain, but just seems like we just have more than our share. I got a call the other day from my insurance agent, and he asked me if I'd read the insurance policy that came out this past January. I have a $500 deductible on my homeowner's insurance, so I have to pay the first $500. Somebody went through my fence, and they didn't have insurance, so I had to pay the first $500. But anyhow, he called and said, "Have you read your policy?" And I said, "Well, even if I had read it, I probably would have understood it. So, no, I haven't. What's changed it?" And he said, "They've changed the wind and storm damage to be from $500 to a percentage of what you have your home and your properties insured for. So, if I have wind and storm damage, I've got to pay over $4,000 to begin with, the very first $4,000. So, there's just so much storm damage that insurance companies are making adjustments. So you might want to check your own policy when it's not the Sabbath or something, but I bring it up just because of the fact that in order for them to continue to be profitable, they're paying out so many claims due to all this wind and storm damage, and sometimes flooding doesn't even cover in our policies. But this nation is heading toward a condition that we find over in Isaiah chapter 56. Isaiah chapter 56. If you would turn over Isaiah 56 with me, begin in verse 10. Isaiah 56 and verse 10, "His watchmen are blind, they are all ignorant, they are all dumb dogs, they cannot bark." It seems like the politicians of this world are not telling us what we need to hear. They're trying to promote themselves. They're like dumb dogs. They can't bark. We aren't hearing the things this nation needs to hear. "Sleeping, lying down, loving to slumber. Yes, they are greedy dogs who never have enough." Again, relating to covetousness. "They are shepherds who cannot understand. They all look to their own way. Each one for his own gain from his own territory. Come, one says, I will bring wine and we will fill ourselves with intoxicating drink. Tomorrow will be as today and much more abundant." Much more abundant. You know, the leaders of this country are blind to the real needs because they're focused on their own desires, as I mentioned, and instead of speaking out and acting on the issues of morality, they're silent. They blindly march on, proclaiming that it will be better tomorrow, especially if we're elected. "Elect us and we'll change things," they assure us. But this world is on a collision course with disaster. People just enjoy the day. They have their good time. They don't seemingly are concerned about the real issues. Over in Isaiah chapter 2, a few chapters back, same book, Isaiah 2 and verse 6. Here we find a people that is full of covetousness. Isaiah 2, beginning in verse 6. For you have forsaken your people, the house of Jacob, because they are filled with eastern ways. They are soothsayers like the Philistines, and they are pleased with children of foreigners. Their land is also full of silver and gold, and there is no end to their treasures. Their land is also full of horses, and there is no end to the chariots. Their land is also full of idols. They worship the work of their own hands, which their own fingers have made. People bow down, and each one man humbles himself. They don't humble God. They humble themselves. Therefore, do not forgive them. Again, we have people just self-seeking, self-serving. But a reckoning is coming. Notice verse 10. Enter into the rock and hide in the dust. For the terror of the Lord and the glory of His majesty, the lofty looks of man shall be humbled, the haughtiness of man shall be bowed down, the Lord alone shall be exalted in that day. You know, it's the terror of the Lord and the glory of His majesty that is precisely what it's going to take to turn this world around. Ironically, man must be forced to accept the way of life that will truly make them happy. They have to be forced. It's so interesting to think about that. The things that would make us happy, God is going to have to force mankind to do that, at least initially. He's coming to rule with a rod of iron. And much of this world's troubles, as I mentioned, I would even venture to say that the majority of this world's troubles stems from the breaking of the Tenth Commandment. The Tenth Commandment, thou shalt not covet. You shall not have evil desires. You shall not want what is rightfully not yours. Over in the New Testament, God gives us some instruction about covetousness in Colossians chapter 3. Colossians chapter 3 and verse 5. Apostle Paul wrote to the church at Colossae and to us, Colossians 3 and verse 5, therefore put to death your members which are on the earth, fornication, uncleanness, passion, evil desire, and covetousness, which is idolatry. You know, the Greek word underlying covetousness is plexonexia. P-L-E-O-N-E-X-I-A, pleonexia, which means the desire to have more. Covetousness is the desire to have more. And perhaps, brethren, it's the ugliest of sins because it revolves around idolatry and reaches into the lives of others. The Greeks defined it as the insatiable desire to have what rightfully belongs to others. Insatiable. It comes from another Greek word, which means to be eager for gain. Not only do I want to acquire, but I eagerly want to acquire. I eagerly desire. Covetousness can be further described as ruthless self-seeking. Ruthless self-seeking, with the emphasis on self. Key word is self, putting yourself above others, seeking what you wrongfully desire. And notice among the things that we are to put to death is covetousness, which is idolatry. It's idolatry. Coveting can lead us astray. It begins to consume our mind and thoughts, and it can become an idol in our lives if we allow it to. Now, desire of and by itself, you know, is normal. There's nothing wrong with desire. It's neutral in nature. There are good desires, of course, to help, to serve, to aid, to rally around, to provide, to put others in front of yourself. And imagination of and by itself is neutral. There's nothing wrong with imagination. Depends how we use it. It depends how we approach it. It's good to be innovative. It's good to think outside the box and be creative. And so nowhere is God criticizing the desire for necessary things in the necessary amount. Nowhere does God criticize us for obtaining the necessary things in the necessary amount. But it is what and how much we desire in combination with how we think and work towards achieving those things that make it right or wrong. It's what and how much we desire in combination with how we think and work towards achieving those things that make something, a desire, evil or a desire good. But in a world that is focused on materialism, in a world that's drifting further and further away from the laws of God, it's important that we understand the dangers of coveting. We can become impatient in our desire to have something because others have it now. We can overextend ourselves in credit, and this bleeds over into the breaking of the other nine commandments. So let's consider the process for a moment. James chapter 1. Again, the process of what desires and coveting and lust is all about. James 1 and verse 13. Let no one say when he is tempted, James 1 and verse 13, I am tempted by God, for God cannot be tempted by evil, nor does he himself tempt anyone, but each one is tempted when he is drawn away by his own desires and enticed. Then when desire has conceived, it gives birth to sin, and sin when it's full grown, sin brings forth death. So notice the process. We're tempted when we're drawn away of our own desires and enticements. We start thinking to ourselves, boy, it would be sure nice to have that, or if I could become this person or that person, then people would look up to me and respect me. I would be considered important, if you would. So when we allow ourselves to nurture certain desires over and over again, then our human reasoning can convince us that for whatever reason we should have certain things. You know, God made man with a marvelous mind that can be used for good in many cases, and sometimes we deceive ourselves. We convince ourselves that it's right to do certain things or to have certain things because of the circumstances involved, and we conclude with, yeah, it's the right thing to do. But when those desires happen to be evil, then it gives birth to sin. You know, most sin begins with a thought. It is a thought that is contrary to the law of God. It is a thought that is left rampant to run its course. It's a thought, it's a want, it's a desire to obtain something that's not good for us. And again, I think so much of the evil in the world around us is due to covetousness. Covetousness. I think it's a byproduct. All covetousness eventually, unless repented of quickly and turned around, all covetousness results in sin in one form or another. I can't think of a good outcome when covetousness takes hold of a person. I can't think of a good outcome. Even if it's not manifested into a particular action, it hurts the mind when we think in wrong realms. Thus, the spirit of the law given by Christ in the New Testament. James 4 and verse 1. James chapter 4 and verse 1. Where do wars and fights come from among you? Do they not come from your desires that for pleasure, did they not come from desires for pleasure that war in your members? Have you ever been in a situation where something is just warring in your members? You know it's not right to do, but you just feel so compelled to do it. Maybe somebody's lashed out at you, and maybe you want to be vindictive and and lash out at them. And you know you're not supposed to, but you just want to. It wars in those members. We think about it. Sometimes we may even dream about it, but it wars at you. It torments you. And sometimes we just give into it, given all the circumstances, convince ourselves it's the right thing to do. Verse 2, you lust and you do not have, you murder and covet, cannot obtain, you fight in war, yet you do not have because you do not ask. You ask and you do not receive because you ask amiss, that you may spend it on your pleasures. That's the bottom line. Everything that we covet, covetousness is so rampant, it's so appealing because it's so pleasurable. We get pleasure out of it. Especially in a world where there's so many woes and troubles, sometimes we find ourselves trying to get pleasure out of something that we should not. It's an old song that's gotten a lot of people in a lot of trouble. It used to be a song, if it feels good, do it. Do it if it's what you feel. You may have heard it. It's a snappy little tune that you can sing and even dance to. But it can really get you in trouble if it's what you feel and you do it. You know, the problem with pleasure is that it only lasts for a season. It's not permanent, and to regain the pleasure, you have to do a retake, if you will. You have to do it over and over again because it just doesn't last. You have to do it over again to recapture the pleasure. So because of desires for pleasure, verse 1, wars and fights and crimes occur. And wars and fights and crimes and disobedience do not lead to happy endings. But they are situations which produce pain and suffering in our lives. They produce heartache, sorrow, and even terror. So the 10th commandment is quite telling. It penetrates and pierces through superficial Christianity. The 10th commandment truly reveals whether a person has given himself to God or not. Has someone surrendered his will to God? The 10th commandment, in many cases, will answer that. And because this commandment pierces directly to the thoughts, the requirements for keeping this commandment are in some ways more firm and rigid than any of the other commandments. So how can we identify whether or not we're lusting after something? How can we identify whether our desires are evil or good? Matthew chapter 7. Matthew chapter 7 gives us a principle that can be utilized here. Matthew 7 and verse 15. Again, Christ speaking, beware of false prophets who come to you in sheep's clothing, but inwardly they are ravenous wolves. Well, how can we beware of the false prophets? How can we tell whether people or not are false prophets? In verse 16, you will know them by their fruits. By their fruits we will know them. By their fruits we can judge them. We can determine what they are. Do men gather grapes, continuing in verse 16, from thorn bushes or figs or thistles? Even so, every good tree bears good fruit, but a bad tree bears bad fruit. A good tree cannot bear bad fruit, nor can a bad tree bear good fruit. Every tree that does not bear good fruit is cut down and thrown into the fire. Therefore, by their fruits you will know them. So just as we can tell false prophets by their fruits, we can also identify false or evil desires. What do our fruits reveal about ourselves? If our fruits are good, if our lives are in order, if most things are in control, then we probably have the 10th commandment in good order. But if we seemingly have unsolvable problems, if our lives are unbalanced, if our lives are hectic and we don't have time for the important things in life like prayer and Bible study, then perhaps we need to evaluate our lives, our actions and thoughts against the 10th commandment. You know, that's not to say that all of our problems come from disobedience. That's not what I'm saying. There are so many things that are out of our control that affect our lives. But if we're overwhelmed with problems, whatever the problem is, I think it's important to at least consider the 10th commandment of desiring something that we shouldn't have. For instance, if someone is sick in our lives, is it our desire to make them all better? Is that more important to us than to obtain God's will? Are we desiring, are we wanting, are we even coveting an outcome that is different than and apart from the law of God, from the will of God? Or do we pray for God's will and ask Him for His help in accepting the answer? Are we desiring something that perhaps we shouldn't have? Again, my point is that we can get a barometer reading on this 10th commandment by looking at the fruits in our lives. Are our fruits good or are our fruits bad? Are we full of hope and assurance or is it worry and anxiety? If it's worry and anxiety, if that is the prominent driving force within our lives, then we're probably not balanced in a certain area. Again, it's not to say, brethren, that you should be praying and you're hoping that people recover, but at the same time, God's will should supersede our will. And sometimes we want things so bad, we want people to be healed in this life, and perhaps it's not meant to be, is all I'm saying. And we should be praying for God's will to be done in our lives. It's hard sometimes, I know. I've had people close to me that, have died, and, it breaks your heart. But again, it just makes you look forward to the resurrection. Let's look at a couple examples in the Old Testament where covetousness played a major part. 1 Kings 21. Go over to the Old Testament rather, 1 Kings chapter 21. 1 Kings 21 and let's begin in verse 1 here. And it came to pass after these things that Naboth the Jezreelite had a vineyard which was in Jezreel next to the palace of Ahab, king of Samaria. Again, Mr. Maxwell talked about wicked Queen Jezebel. She comes into the picture momentarily. So Ahab spoke to Naboth, saying, "Give me your vineyard, that I may have it for a vegetable garden, because it is near to my house, for I will give you a vineyard better than it, or if it seems good to you, I'll give you some money. I'll give you its worth in money." But Naboth said to Ahab, "The Lord forbid that I should give the inheritance of my fathers to you." Naboth was using the legality of his inheritance right that you can find over in Leviticus chapter 25 to refuse King Ahab's offer. Legally, he was not required to sell or to barter his inheritance for another plot of ground. And then as being a constitutional monarch, Ahab had to honor and obey that law. So notice what Ahab did in verse 4. Verse 4, "So Ahab went into his house, sullen and displeased because of the word which Naboth the Jezreelite had spoken to him, for he said, 'I will not give you the inheritance of my fathers.' And he lay down on his bed, and he turned away his face, and he would eat no food." So he kind of threw a hissy fit, if you will. Here was the king of Israel in all his splendor and glory. And as king, think about what he had. Think about what he could have had his mind dwelling on. What are all the things that a king has that he could have enjoyed? Instead, he was so focused on this vineyard that he wanted to have that he went and he laid in his bed and he refused to eat. So then Queen Jezebel comes on the scene in verse 5. Jezebel's wife came to him and said to him, "Why is your spirit so sullen that you eat no food?" But he said to her, "Because I spoke to Naboth the Jezreelite saying, 'Give me,'" and so he tells her the story there. And notice Jezebel, his wife, said to him, "You now exercise authority over Israel. Rise, eat food, get yourself out of bed, and, clean yourself up, let your heart be cheerful, for I will give you the vineyard of Naboth the Jezreelite." And there's a reason that Queen Jezebel was called the Wicked Queen. as was mentioned in the sermonette. So she wrote these letters in verse 8, 1 Kings 21 in verse 8. She sealed them with his seal and sent the letters to the elders and the nobles who were dwelling in the city with Naboth. She wrote in the letter saying, proclaim a fast and seek Naboth, the man with this vineyard, with high honor among the people, and seek two men, scoundrels. It takes a scoundrel to know a scoundrel, I guess. And seek two men, these scoundrels, before him to bear witness against him, saying, you have blasphemed God and the king. Take him out and stone him that he may die. So the men of the city and the elders who were in the inhabitants of the city did as Jezebel sent to them. That was written in these letters. So they execute this plan. Again, notice that the evil desires turn into evil deeds. They do stone Naboth in verse 13. And then Jezebel tells Ahab to go and get this vineyard. So these evil thoughts of Ahab led to an evil desire. The evil desire turned into an evil action. In this case, it was murder. So the breaking of the 10th commandments will cause transgression of at least one or more of the other commandments. And God was not pleased with Ahab. As you read through the rest of the chapter, and bad things came upon Ahab and his family eventually. But all this started because of the wrong desire that Ahab had. And clearly you can see here that one sin leads to another sin. This is why it's so important to realize and to recognize that uncontrolled desires, or lust, if you will, can have in our lives. We have to be able to control our desires. We have to beware of the evil desires. Over in 2 Samuel 13, let's notice another example. 2 Samuel chapter 13, David liked beautiful women. We can read over in 1 Samuel 25 and verse 3 that Abigail was beautiful. We know that Bathsheba was beautiful, that David went to these extremes to acquire her. David himself was said to have a fair countenance, which if you look up the original word, it means beautiful. So David was handsome. He married beautiful women, and it's no wonder that his children were also very beautiful. 2 Samuel 13 and verse 1, after this, Absalom, the son of David, 2 Samuel 13 and verse 1, he had a lovely sister whose name was Tamar, and Amnon, the son of David, loved her. Now, Amnon was the oldest son of David. His mother's name was Ahinoa, A-H-I-N-O-A, and Tamar's mother was Maacah, and Tamar was the full sister of Absalom. So they were actually, this was his half-sister. In verse 2, Amnon was so distressed over his sister that he became sick, for she was a virgin, and it was improper for Amnon to do anything to her. She was protected territory, if you will. She was strictly off limits. Amnon, or anyone for that matter, was not to touch her. But Amnon desired her. He lusted for her. And he became so infatuated and love struck with her that he actually began losing weight. And think about it once again. Here's a member of the royal family. Amnon probably could have had a lot. In fact, he did have a lot that he could have enjoyed and thought about. He probably could have gone out with other ladies that weren't his half-sister. But instead, he coveted something that was wrongful in nature. So now, a crafty cousin of Amnon enters the picture in verse 3. Amnon had a friend whose name was Joadab, the son of Shimeah, David's brother. So here was a cousin that comes on the scene, and Joadab was a very crafty man. And he said to him, why are you, the king's son, becoming thinner day after day? Will you not tell me this? So Amnon confided in him. He said, I love Tamar, my brother Absalom's sister. It's funny, they just thought about it. He kind of says, my brother Absalom's sister. It's like it wasn't his half-sister. He doesn't mention it's my sister, but my brother Absalom's sister on that other side of the family. So it's okay. Again, good old human reasoning, you know, coming into action here, justifying things. So Joadab said to him, this crafty cousin, lie down in your bed and pretend to be ill. And when your father comes to see you, you say to him, please let my sister Tamar come and give me food and prepare the food in my sight that I may eat it from her hand. So Amnon lay down and pretended to be ill. And when David came in, the king, to see him, Amnon said to the king, please let Tamar, my sister, come and make a couple of cakes for me in my sight that I may eat it from her hand. And David sent home to Tamar, saying, go to your brother Amnon's house. So I don't know if he had his own house or separate part of the palace, but to prepare food for Amnon. So Tamar went to her brother Amnon's house, and he was lying down. So she took the flour and kneaded it like a good sister should, like an obedient daughter should to David, made cakes in his sight and baked the cakes. And she took the pan and placed them before him, and he refused to eat. And Amnon said, have everybody go out from there. There is the beginning of trouble. And Amnon said to Tamar, bring the food into my bedroom that I may eat from your hand. Again, more trouble on the way. You just see it coming. And Tamar took the cakes which she had made and brought them to Amnon, her brother, in the bedroom. And when she had brought them to him to eat, he took a hold of her and said, come lie with me. And she answered him and said, no, my brother, do not force me, for no such thing should be done in Israel. Do not do this disgraceful thing. And I, where could I take my shame? As for you, you would be like one of the fools in Israel. Therefore, please speak to the king, for he will not withhold me from you. But he would not heed her voice. In verse 14, and being stronger than she, he forced her to lie with him. And Amnon, notice the circle of events here. He had this great desire for this lady, for his half-sister, but Amnon hated her exceedingly. He wanted her so bad, and then, once he had her, he hated her. So he hated her with so much more hatred, which he hated her, was greater than the love which he loved her. And he said to her, arise, be gone. And she said to him, no, indeed, the evil of sending me away is far worse than that. But anyhow, he ended up sending her away. Tamar had a robe of many colors in verse 8, for the king's virgin daughters wore such apparel. And his servant put her out and bolted the door behind her. And Tamar put ashes on her head and tore her robe of many colors that was on her and laid her hand on her head and went away crying bitterly. So what covetousness and sin produced in this case was an unintended result. Amnon thought he would be happy if he had Tamar, but instead it turned out differently. There was hate. There was restlessness. There was dissatisfaction. There was a guilty conscience that Amnon had. There was humiliation. There was hurt. There was torment. There was anxiety and other bad things. Verse 21, when King David heard of these things, he got very angry. So David was riled when he heard about this. But if you read through the story, notice what David did. He didn't apparently do anything. Why didn't David take action? Was it because David had done something very similar? Was it because David was so paralyzed by his own sin that he didn't act out and do anything to Amnon? There wasn't rape, of course, involved with David's case, but there was adultery and murder. And think about it for a moment. Amnon was the firstborn. He was probably a young lad when David took on Bathsheba as another wife. And perhaps he witnessed this whole thing. If it's good enough for Dad, then I can do it. Our examples are so important in children's lives. And the story doesn't end there. If you read on, there's more and more fruits, if you will, bad fruits in this case. The Absalom, the brother of Tamar, had a lot of time to think about it. And as verse 23 records, and he ends up killing Amnon. He actually started thinking wrong thoughts and evil thoughts. And after 2 years, after he found out about it, he revenged Amnon, or Tamar rather, by killing Amnon. And then David, evidently this destroyed Absalom's desire to be in the family, and perhaps may have pushed him over the edge. As we read through Kings and Chronicles, you find out that Absalom tried to usurp David off of his throne. So just a bad desire or a lust just turn into more and more to deceit, and then to rape, and then to murder. Just nothing comes good from covetousness. Covetousness was and is the precursor of other sins to follow. Over in 1 Timothy 6 and verse 9, let's look at some ways that we can fight covetousness. We heard about one in the sermonette today. 1 Timothy 6, beginning of verse 9. And there's also a cause of much covetousness. 1 Timothy 6, for those who desire to be rich fall into a temptation and a snare, into many foolish and harmful lusts, which drown men in destruction and perdition. You know, covetousness, left unchecked, can develop into full-blown lust and become very harmful, as this verse describes. And then the word for harmful in the Greek is blaberos, B-L-A-B-E-R-O-S. It means injurious. Maybe this is where we get the word blabber. When we blabber things sometimes, it is injurious and harmful. But notice harmful lust. These are lusts which harm us, which hurt us. All too often there is pain involved. But desiring the wrong things in life causes people to stumble and to fall in temptation. They become entrapped in many senseless and hurtful cravings. Many times we plunge ourselves into ruin and destruction if we covet things. Perhaps we tend to think ourselves that we're outside the group that does this, but notice what is written in verse 10. For the love of money is a root of all kinds of evil, from which some have strayed from the faith in their greediness. You can't stray from the faith unless you've been exposed and are close to the faith. So it's not just for the outside world covetousness. It's something that people in God's church have had and continue to have to deal with. But they have strayed from the faith in their greediness and pierced themselves through with many sorrows. Seems like sin never walks alone. You know, that's why sin is so bad. It spreads itself. But notice in verse 11. Verse 11. But you, O man, flee these things and pursue righteousness. I was going to cover something else here, but for lack of time, I'll just move on to verse 11. But you, O man of God, flee these things and pursue righteousness, pursue godliness, pursue faith, love, patience, and gentleness, as we heard in the sermonette today. So many people are not gentle anymore. People seem to lash out for this reason or that reason. Gentleness is becoming a thing of the past, apparently, or seemingly in the world. It's important for God's people to pursue that, as we heard about in the sermonette today. So pursue these things and fight the good fight of faith. Lay hold on eternal life for which you were called and confessed, a good confession, and in the presence of many witnesses. We have to fight the good fight, brethren, so that we can lay hold on eternal life. This means that we have to fight and struggle and wrestle against covetousness. Again, wanting those things which are not ours to have. So let's see if we can put this all in perspective. Desire of and by itself is not evil. Desire of and by itself, it's neutral. Even as material things of and by themselves are neutral. And nowhere does God criticize us for having a desire for necessary things in the necessary amount. It is what and how much we desire in combination with how we think and work towards those desires that actually determines if something is wrong or something is right. If it's a wrong desire or a right desire. Let me close by giving you a few reminders on how to combat covetousness. Point number one, put God first in your life. This is how to combat covetousness in our lives. Point number one, put God first in your lives. And just as the 10th commandment can affect the first commandment, if we put God first in our lives, it will allow us to have power to accept and to honor that 10th commandment, to avoid covetousness. We avoid covetousness by putting God first. So point one is put God first in your life. Point number two, pursue righteousness. Pursue righteousness, as we read here in 1 Timothy 6. Get your mind off self. Be outgoing in your approach to life. Have faith that God will provide for us in ample time. Sometimes we get impatient and we want things now. Have faith that God will provide us the right things in the right time. Work to have patience and the other fruits of God's Holy Spirit, including gentleness, as we heard. Point number three, be thankful for what you have. Be thankful for what you have. You know, when we're focused on all the things that we have, then we tend to think on them instead of thinking about the things that we don't have. You know, King Ahab had many blessings. Amnon had many blessings he could have dwelt upon and had. Instead, both of those coveted and wanted something. They desired something that wasn't good for them, that shouldn't have been theirs. In both cases, the results were ungodly and unwanted. So count your blessings on a daily basis. Thanks God for all the goodness that He provides for us now and in the world to come. Point number four, recognize and remember that we all have this insatiable desire within ourselves that causes us to become unstable at times. Realize, point number four, recognize and realize or remember that we have this insatiable desire, this nature that lies within us that causes us to become unstable at times. This is why we need the first three points in our lives. We need to put God first in our lives. We need to be pursuing righteousness, and we should be thankful for what God provides for us. Because if we don't have these first three points in our lives, then this insatiable nature that exists within us will cause a hunger and thirst and will eventually or can eventually consume us and cause us to hurt ourselves or others. So recognize and remember that we have this insatiable nature that at times causes us to become unstable. Point number five, consider your motives. Consider your motives. When we're considering to do something, ask yourself, what is my motive? Why do I want to obtain this? Analyze your thoughts and your reasons. And if it's for the right reasons, proceed. And if it's not for the right reason, then back up and go to plan B. And then after making a decision to do something, be sure to examine your fruits. Point number six, be sure to examine your fruits. Sometimes we want to do the right things, like perhaps you want to go back to school and further your education. There's nothing wrong with that. But if you have a family, like happened with me, I had to analyze myself after a few months, and I had to just not go for a while. It's not the best way to do it, trust me, because you have to get back in the swing of things. But sometimes you just, even if it's for the right reasons, you just got to look at your fruits and say, okay, if fruits are good, I'll continue. If not, I'm going to take some time off. And that's what I did. So look at the fruits. Even if it's a good decision, just make sure that the fruits are good. If not, then reevaluate, make adjustments. And then point number seven, ask God to guide you in all our decisions. You know, there's lots of good things to pursue in life. Pursuing, it's the right time. Look to God for wisdom and guidance. And it's only through His help that we can differentiate the good and the pure desires from the evil and the bad desires. So keep in mind this 10th commandment that the world seemingly continues to ignore. Beware of wrong desires.